This is a poem. It's at the end of the book. It's called Meditation, and it's basically a record of an attempt to meditate, and it's also a description of what I think meditation is, and it's also a record of failure. Meditation. The long, shuddering intake of breath from the air conditioner plays its one plaintive note for all it's worth. So much feeling in that undying death rattle, I believe more than the air is being conditioned. And behind it, the sound of crickets, where there are no crickets. The crickets are in me. All of this is somewhere in me. And I am somewhere else, a vista opening on a verge. Scenes waiting to become sounds, sounds waiting to become words, words waiting to become thoughts, thoughts waiting to remake the world because the world they behold is unbearably bright and utterly silent, strange and beautiful and terrifying.
Kurt, as you walked into the studio, you threw out this comment that I'm still thinking about, that you're turning away from humor and more towards poetry. The community probably knows you, and beyond the community, as a humor writer. So talk about that. What happened there?
Well, I spent a long time doing humor. At different times in my life, I've made my living from it. I wrote humor for television. I'm in the radio business now, but I came into radio as a comedy writer, not as a manager. I was raised to love both humor and poetry. I started out as a poet, as a teenager, and was getting into some good magazines and enjoying it. And then I got bit by the comedy writing bug, and I turned to that, and I did that for a long time. I wrote for The Onion about 20 years. I published stuff in The New Yorker, McSweeney's Internet Tendency, all the good places where you could publish humor. I ran a literary humor site, actually, until just a month or two ago.
Big Jewel?
The Big Jewel.
Yeah.
Where I mostly selected and edited stuff by other people, but I published a lot of my stuff, too.
Up until a month ago, you're not doing that anymore?
It's there as an archive, but I've given it up.
Wow, you're serious about this.
I'm serious about being serious. Well, I found myself thinking that I had abandoned poetry too early and that I wanted to go back to it. I felt like unfinished business. Also, I kind of burned out on humor. Humor is very unforgiving, very unrelenting. It is demanding.
A lot harder, I think, than most people realize.
I think it's a very difficult form of writing, and you can burn out on it. I had funny headline fatigue from writing for The Onion for so long. And everything, it's a joke, a follow-up to the joke, a setup to the next joke, and then finally ending with some joke that tops them all and somehow unifies everything. Because if you're trying to write literary humor, which was my goal, I was inspired by the New Yorker writers of old, you're always trying to make a piece of art, not just something that's funny, not just something that's topical. But after a while, I sort of found myself wanting to do other things, and I felt very restive and unhappy with only being able to make jokes. So I turned back to poetry about 3 years ago, and I simply haven't looked back. And I'm having a lot of fun with it. I did collect my humor into a book called It's Funny Until Someone Loses an Eye, Then It's Really Funny. But that's pretty much going to be the capstone of my humor writing career, I believe. I don't see myself going in that direction again. My latest book is a chapbook of poems called One of These Things Is Not Like the Other. And
you have another one coming.
I have another chapbook coming called Feral Grief, which deals with some pretty dark stuff. I find a lot of poems about childhood are coming to me now.
So you're kind of entering this therapy mode, eh?
I've been through the therapy mode, but not in my own work.
Yeah.
And I did a lot of work on all of this stuff. It would be hard to describe the home we grew up in. The one good thing about it is it was like being in a used bookstore. We were surrounded by thousands of books of all kinds, and they were kind of my rescue. I lost myself in books, and eventually I lost myself in writing.
Yeah. Did you find yourself as well? Is this a process of finding yourself?
You're always finding yourself. The artist is always inventing and reinventing themselves.
That's true.
And so I can't say what will happen. Maybe someday I'll write a comic novel or something, but I'd be surprised at this point. My publisher asked me if I would do a memoir, because memoirs are hot, and, you know, and if you have a disastrous childhood, they make really good reading. So I started out
Shouldn't
to write
laugh.
It. I know. Well, it's everything's grist for the mill, and it's all good, and it's actually good to articulate and to think through things.
Yeah.
In writing, I think it is very therapeutic, and hopefully it provides something of interest to the reader. Oh, what a horrible thing. I'm so glad that didn't happen to me.
Yeah, that's probably part of it, yeah.
But when I started to try to write prose about my childhood, they just came out as poems, and that's what's been happening.
I was going to talk about humor, and now it
I'd love to talk about humor.
Yeah?
I love humor. I've enjoyed it all my life. I was raised on it.
Yeah.
I still read and enjoy humor by other people. I just did a blurb for a very funny comic novel called Scotland Before the Bomb by M.J. Nichols. And it's a brilliant, brilliant post-apocalyptic comic novel. Well, I love it. I love to read it.
Yeah.
I'm just glad I didn't have to write it.
Yeah, yeah. I noticed on your bio here that you talked about an autobiographical novel. Are you working on something like that?
At the time,
I'm intrigued with that title because that kind of gives you, well, I might lie in a few places, and that makes it fiction. Maybe it's an online bio.
No, at the time I wrote that, I was probably still trying to fulfill my publisher's dictum that I should write a memoir. Well, I was going to write a memoir, and then half of my family threatened to sue me if I did that.
You kind of have to wait till everybody's dead.
I promised my parents I would wait till they're dead, and I half fulfilled that.
But I think that's where, when you call it a novel, you can kind of get away with it. It's like, hey, that part I made up.
That was how I would get away with everything legally. But then when I started trying to write it, it came out as poems. So that's how it's coming out.
So autobiographical poems.
Yes. And one of the poems from that manuscript just won the Atlanta Review International Poetry Contest.
Nice.
It's a poem called Susie, and it's not about a person. It's about a horrendous family pet.
Whoa, what kind? Do we get to know?
A mix Schnauzer Dachshund.
Ah, a dog.
A vicious dog that somehow symbolizes the whole life of the family.
Well, if you're giving up comedy, have you also given up the sibling comedy team?
Yes, that was something we did after our parents' marriage broke up. I now realize that what I was trying to do was to create some kind of substitute family with some kind of positive purpose. But it did teach me and my brothers, there were four of us, to write and to produce and to act after a fashion. And we really got interested in the writing side of it. So I'm the one that stuck with that and eventually did comedy writing and television and elsewhere for a living.
Yeah.
One of my brothers ended up in the film industry. Another one left creative work, but he still fills journals with stuff. And the other one lives in Germany and does some writing there.
And you've also, as you mentioned, done writing for television. Poetry probably doesn't go that route. How is that different? Are you going to miss that on television? What, late night and Politically Incorrect? I mean, that's pretty cool.
I did write for Bill Maher at Politically Incorrect. And then I went over to Craig Kilborn, who had started the Late Late Show for Letterman's company. And I did that until he retired. And then I found a job writing for radio. It really is a huge amount of fun, comedy writing. And actually, I liked radio more than television. I was kind of raised on radio. I was raised after the era of old-time radio, but by somebody who had a fanatical interest in it.
Yeah.
And so I always liked the audio medium and the possibilities of the use of imagination in that medium.
Is it different in the sense that with television, you might get a more immediate response? With radio, you always wonder, is anybody listening?
I like not knowing if anyone's listening. In television, you have a studio audience and you can hear right away if a joke worked, and that's awful fun. But I just got tired of doing topical things. I wasn't interested in the moment so much. I was interested in the kind of stuff that literature deals with. Ezra Pound described it. He said, journalism is news. Literature is news that stays news. And when I wrote humor, I wanted to write humor that had some kind of staying power. So I wasn't really interested in topical things personally. Mm-hmm. That's what you get paid to write for in television or in radio. And it's a lot of fun, but it's not very personal and it's not long-lasting. I don't think watching a Daily Show 10 years from now, it's still going to be quite as funny. But when I read James Thurber and Robert Benchley and Dorothy Parker and S.J. Pearlman mm-hmm. and Garrison Keillor and Ian Frazier and Veronica Gang and all these people that influenced me from The New Yorker, they're still funny. That was always my interest. There is a kind of a secret connection between humor and poetry, which I eventually figured out, which is they are both very concentrated forms of language that are trying to make it do double duty. And in humor, it's double entendre. It's mm-hmm. pretending to say one thing while saying another. And in poetry, it's saying one thing that actually branches off into other things in interesting, ambiguous ways.
How has your process changed when you're sitting down to write a comedy piece and when you're sitting down to write a poem? Do you approach it differently?
Not really. I sit down with a pad of legal yellow paper, and I stare at it until small drops of blood begin to form on my forehead, and then I begin writing. It doesn't matter whether it's funny or serious or a poem or a humor piece.
They're all difficult.
They're all difficult, and yet they all involve getting in touch with some kind of a spirit inside yourself or perhaps in the collective unconscious that seems to invade your mind and run away with your pen. That's what usually happens
to me. You have to get into
me.
This kind of a zone. I've written, and sometimes I wonder, what if I can't come back? It's kind of a trance or a madness.
It is. It's a little bit like running a
Ouija board.
Somebody
needs to pull you back.
Well, I don't know what that is, but I know it's like creativity, like love, is inexhaustible. I really see it as a form of love because it's a form of loving the universe that we find ourselves in, reflecting on it. Just the way, you know, a lover wants to describe the loved one.
Talk about this current available poetry book. One of these things is not like the other. Interesting cover, too. You're going to have to go to Michigan News Agency to see this cover. It's going to stick with you.
Thank you. That cover actually came before the book and before the title.
Ah.
My girlfriend at the time, I was living in central Wisconsin, was a teacher of art and photography. And I'll describe the image for the listener. It is a woman's face, and if you look closely, you can see it's a subtle composite of her daughter's face on one half and her face on the other. And on her side, the eye has been replaced with a clock. I love the picture so much that I wanted it to be the poetry book cover, and then I had to come up with the title. And being a humor guy, I just naturally think that all titles should be funny, even if the book is really not meant to be mostly funny.
So that humor is still sneaking through.
Well, the thing about it in poems is you can start anywhere and end anywhere. You can start sad and end happy. You can do everything in between. The complete freedom of it is very, very seductive, I feel. It's been very liberating for me, and I've just been having nothing but fun doing it.
When I read the poetry in this collection, maybe because I already knew you had been a humor writer, it's not laugh-out-loud funny, not that kind of a funny, but there's a little twist, a little humor, a little, you know, one side of your mouth goes up when you're reading it. So it's still there.
I think that's true. And when I was younger and first starting to write poetry, mostly I didn't do funny stuff. But I found when I returned to it, after all those years of humor, I really couldn't suppress the humor impulse. And I don't even try to. I just let whatever is going to happen, to be honest.
Yeah.
I feel like I'm not even really that much in control of it. I'm more like a ringmaster, letting different wraiths come through my mind and watching
Muse.
Them. And, yeah.
Yeah. Are you a man of rewrites, or when you get into that zone, you create a finished product?
It all depends. There's some things I worked on for years because I couldn't solve the problem that I saw, and other things that just come to me complete and entire. A lot of it depends on... You talked about being in a zone. I think it is a zone. And lately I'm in a different zone. I met somebody. I fell in love. I've been writing a lot of love poems lately. But I met someone here named Cheryl. And we've become very close. And I find myself treating her like my muse a lot.
Changes a man.
It does. So that's a lot of what I've been writing lately. And when I do this reading at Michigan News, I will read from the book, but there's a lot of new ones that are
different. I was going to ask you about that. You're going to be doing a reading on Wednesday, December 11th,
yes.
along with another poet, Tim Hawkins from Grand Rapids.
Right.
So tell us about this event.
I think there will be violence. No, there will be.
See, we can't keep you serious. I tell you, Kurt.
Well, you know, Dean Hawk, who runs the Michigan News and has these readings. It's really a wonderful series of readings she does. She seems to want to do about one a month.
Yeah.
There was one just this week, and I went to it. Cheryl and I both went to it. And they're all good. She has a way of pairing people that play off each other in a way. So we'll each read. We'll each answer questions. We'll talk. We'll sign books. I will probably read one humor piece just so that people have an idea what's in this book.
From the humor book. Until someone loses an eye.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's really Both funny. Will be available there.
They will. But I'll focus more on the poetry chapbook, and then I'll read some new poems.
From Feral Grief?
From Feral Grief, but then after most of that manuscript is done, it's still being worked on. But
so even newer beyond that?
Newer stuff, all the love poems. And then what happened was, after I met Cheryl, I also wrote a couple of really, really funny things that had nothing to do with anything except that I was just so happy when I wrote them.
See, it's sneaking through again.
Yes, it did.
Hard not to laugh. You have to, you know. And before I let you go, Kurt, there's another thing in your bio that I just have to ask you about. It says that you're plotting to overthrow our present system of government.
Only in my mind.
Oh, shucks.
It's all in the mind. No, I'm really very apolitical. I find most of the nurturing things in life, for me anyway, whatever I know about spirituality, it's in the arts, it's in nature. So music, poetry, painting, the people I care about, those are the essence of life. Everything else is kind of not as important as a lot of people seem to think it is, in my opinion. I don't think 10 or 20 years from now anyone's going to care who was president today. I think a lot of people will care about the poems that were written, the songs that were sung, the paintings that were done, the babies that were born, the people who loved each other. That's the stuff that matters.
May it be so.
I hope it's so. I personally believe it is so.
Thank you for coming in, Kurt. It's been a pleasure to talk with you.
Thank you for having me.